fire it up right about now. So hopefully everybody out there is, has having a good week. We have a great topic for you today. We're going to be talking a little bit about system cleanup and maintenance. We're going to go over a couple of the applications. We're going to be hitting on three major topics. We're going to talk first about spyware. Then we're going to talk a little bit about viruses. Then we're going to talk a little bit about general sluggishness. And then we're going to finish up this little segment just going over some small stuff like, the things you need to do to keep your PC up and running correctly. Now, this is going to be a PC-only chat. I do have some information about Macs, but I don't have a lot of the free applications. All the applications that I'm going to be talking to you about tonight are going to be free. First of all, because I am cheap. I do not have a large sum of money anywhere that that I'm hiding, not telling anybody about. It's all just... I think that you should be able to do almost anything you need to do with your computer on the cheap. I mean, we're not even talking about Linux here. We're not even talking about any of the other applications like that. I mean, if you have a normal PC, if you went out and you bought a Dell, Gateway, HP, whatever, you have whatever operating system was on it. Specifically, we're going to be discussing Windows XP today. You should be able to maintain that PC with freely available software. And that's one of the things that I've kind of prided myself on trying to find. While I do have the resources and work to order, $600 or $700 programs should I need to. Not saying that I'm actually going to do it, but it's one of those things where you don't want to have to do it unless it's absolutely necessary. So we're going to be talking, like I said, we're going over spyware, viruses, sluggishness, and then just general tips and updates for your computer. But first off, what we're going to actually talk to you a little bit about is the sponsor for today's show. This show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. So if you're looking for a better way to present or work together during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple. Web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen shows up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged one of those pesky permanent fees like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want, as long as you need, for one flat rate. It's great. Just with GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime, and never even have to spring for lunch. You'll not only end up saving a lot of time, but a boatload of money as well. So try GoToMeeting free for 45 days at GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. Like we said before, if you'd like to find the rest of the shows, we do have a rather scripted show that we do twice a week. Which, by the way, episode 161 will be out tomorrow to give the Tech Talk Live a little bit of a time to percolate. That'll be out tomorrow, probably around 5 or 6 o'clock. I'm taping it tonight. I'm just going to give it a little bit of a leeway before it actually comes out. So that's over at caffeination.com. We traditionally discuss things like all the news that's fit to geek over, anything caffeinated that's in the news, and I pretty much run the gamut with anything I can find online that I think's interesting. I try and share it with you. It's a relatively laid-back program, so hopefully you enjoy that, and this as well. All right, so like I said, we're going to run down some of the discussion. So first of all, the first thing you need to do when you're working on a machine is you need to identify what problem you want to address. If I work in a university, so a lot of the times that you have students who come in and say, you just need to fix my computer, or a faculty member shows up and they say, I'm having problems with this, can you help me? So the first thing I say, all right, well, you need to do a little bit more. You need to describe what the problem is. And sometimes they say, well, I don't know what happened. And that's probably one of the most primary things that everybody says to me. I don't know what happened. I didn't do anything. And there are perfectly reasonable explanations for most of the things that can happen to any machine that you may operate. It might have been a long time since it's been reinstalled. You could not have a firewall installed on it. There's a whole bunch of different things that can happen to any machine that's basically out in the open. One of the statistics that I read recently is that it used to be, about 10 years ago, if you had a machine and you put absolutely no security patch or no... I think it's no security patches and no firewall, and you just put it naked on the internet. You installed Windows XP or whatever the flavor of the month was at that point in time. You installed it, You dropped it online and you just let it sit there. It would take 10 minutes before that machine was infected. That was 10 years ago. Now the time is down to 2 minutes. So you really need to make sure that your machine has completely up-to-date security patches. You want to make sure that you have a good firewall. I'm not just talking Windows firewall. You might actually, unfortunately, have to spend a little bit of money for those, although there are free ones available. That could be another show, but still. There's certain things you need to do, and everyone, no matter how good you are with computers, like I said, I work in a university. I am the technical support department for architecture in that university. I control pretty much anything with electricity. So I get asked all kinds of questions. I mean, from somebody cut a cord on one of the lights we used to photograph things and I had to splice that back together, to a faculty member completely destroying a laptop, just not like physically, but you know, just kind of ripping into the software and just having at it. So it takes a little bit of time sometimes, you know. Alright, first thing you need to do, like I said, is you need to identify your problem. You need to make sure you know what it is you're actually trying to fix here. And it could be something as simple as they say, well, it just doesn't run the way it used to. Okay, well, it's quite common for a machine that's been installed for a little while to start slowing down, and it's things get built up, like somebody might put a trial version of a program in there, they might do anything else, but it you need to clean them out every once in a while, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But alright, we have somebody in the chat. Hello there. Alright, yeah. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. You need to identify the problem. So if it's general sluggishness, there's a whole list of things. If they're starting to get pop-ups and they're not clicking on anything, that's one of the symptoms of spyware. If they're starting to go to websites that they don't type in, that's a massive symptom of spyware or malware in general. That's one of the major problems I get with a lot of student PCs. And it's not so much viruses anymore. It's more along the lines of things just going wrong with the machine, and they don't know what it is, so they would like a little help. Now, there's a list of applications that I'm going to be posting over at caffeination.com, but we're just going to discuss them here, and the easiest way to find all of them is to actually just Google them. I have a version number for one of them, so you might, if you want to, you can just open up a notepad or something like that and write it down. But, again, if you check on over at caffeination.com, you can have a direct link to all of them later on. All right, the first thing we're going to talk about is spyware. So if you're opening up Internet Explorer, Firefox, or anything else like that, and all of a sudden strange pop-ups come up, or if you start your computer and different things pop up that you didn't install, or and it's a little easier to diagnose on a one-person computer. So if a student brings their laptop in and they're saying, yeah, I'm the only person who uses this, then I know anything that's wrong with that computer is technically that student's fault, through either action or inaction. So the first thing I'd like you to do is Google an application called SpyBot Search and Destroy. Now, like I said, everything I'm going to talk about here is either freeware or is free to use for non-commercial purposes. So you cannot, I don't think you can actually use this for profit, which means basically you can't sell the applications, or I think it's a little bit of a gray area as to whether or not you can use them in a consulting firm. So just keep that in the back of your mind. You might want to read the license agreement before you continue. But anyway, your personal machine here, that's what we're discussing. SpyBot Search and Destroy is an absolutely wonderful time saver of an application. Now, unfortunately, there is no catch-all for every spyware program out there. There's no program that you can install and just leave be and never have to do anything to. It's kind of like a pie-in-the-sky dream. You're never going to end up sitting there and saying, you know what, I can't remember the last time I had to do a little bit of house cleaning. You have to keep up on it. So SpyBot has two main things that it can do. First of all, it has a massive dictionary of any of the little bits of malware that happen to be out there. And it's updated fairly frequently. And it has an integrated update solution. So basically you just click download the updates on it and it just sucks them all right down into your machine. And then you can do a scan and it catches 95% of the stuff that any machine that I've ever been on has been infected with. We're not going to talk about things like rootkits and everything else like that because they're incredibly complicated, and even tech support people have issues trying to get them off machines. But If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. Basically, you can Google rootkit, and it should be able to explain what that is for you. But it's a very devious little program that lives under the rest of the operating system there. All right, that's the first thing that SpyBot can do for you. It's a very good catch-all installation. You know, like I said, you just click scan, and if you have a rather large machine, large hard drive or something, it's going to take a little while. I'm not even going to lie to you. It's going to take a good long time to actually go through everything that you have. So you might want to just let it run overnight. I mean, it's not going to take a very long time. It's not going to... It's one of those things where you just kind of want to let it run, without actually, trying to use the computer at the same time. Because the more you use your computer, the more it's going to actually slow down. So, alright. But, the next thing that actually SpyBot actually has is something called an immunize button. What basically is there's certain ways that spyware get into your computer. Now, it might be something you click on and download if you're in like one of those ubiquitous game sites that are online, or it might even be something that you have absolutely no control over. It could just be you happen to view an ad, or you were on MySpace, or I don't think Facebook has as many issues, but you were on MySpace and you happen to view an ad that has Java that was formatted incorrectly, which created some kind of crazy situation on your machine which allowed you to do it, or you hadn't changed your password. I mean, there's hundreds of ways you can do it. But there's certain areas of the internet that are kind of, let's just say, less than perfectly maintained. They're kind of the underbelly, the soft underbelly of the internet. It's the dark corners that nobody really likes to talk about. But yeah, thank you very much. We have somebody over in the chat, Hercules, says just don't use the T-Timer application. T-Timer in SpyBot is an application which kind of tries to guide your direction as you go through the internet. It's a real pain in the rear end. Even when I use it in the labs, I don't install it just because it does create massive havoc, even just trying to go through normal operation on your machine. Well, just to finish up about it, immunize. The immunize feature has a certain set of heuristics. It has a certain set of things that it looks for. It can block anything from a website address that's malformed. It can block just holes in the back of programs, or it could block ports on your machine. But it goes through, and at last check, there was something around 14,000 different instances that it actually blocked. So it really helps to cut down on the amount of stuff that actually makes it onto your machine. All right, the next thing we wanted to talk to you about is actually a pay application on the one side, but they do still maintain the free version. That's LavaSoft Adaware. Now, like I was talking about, unfortunately, there is no catch-all spyware. There's nothing you can install there and just have to walk away. So LavaSoft is kind of an overlap, and a lot of the things that you're going to catch with LavaSoft are tracking cookies. So if you're heading on a website like Yahoo, you log in to do your fantasy football or whatever else like that, or if you're on a site like Gmail, they leave little files in temporary directory on your machine that allow you to log back in without having to type anything in. Or some of the more nefarious applications will actually leave little files on your machine so that they can find out where you go from website to website. And that's what the Adaware is particularly good at snagging. So it'll take care of all those for you. Both all these programs that we're talking about so far, at least, are incredibly self-explanatory, and they have great help documentation to them. The only thing that I would caution you with the LavaSoft Adaware, sometimes it can be a little bit hard to actually find the free version on the LavaSoft home site, so you might want to go over to download.com over at CNET and download the version there, because it's a little bit easier to get the free version, because it says license either freeware or shareware. The shareware one gives you, I think, a 2-week or 30-day trial. I can't remember. I haven't used it in a while. Like I said, I use almost all the free applications. it gives you, you know, a short trial and then makes you pay for it. So if you'd like to do it and you don't have a problem spending, I think, $35 or $40 for it, just, you know, knock yourself out. All right, now the next application that I'm going to talk to you about, it's actually written by Microsoft, and it's one of the better things they've done. And it's it doesn't deal with Adware specifically, but it speeds up your machine and it actually closes a lot of the holes that some of the machines use. It's called RegClean 4.1. Now, this is a very, very, very simple application. The only problem with it is it hasn't been updated since, 6 years now. It's not something that's in active development over at Microsoft anymore. What it does is it takes just a... All right, sorry. Before I get ahead of myself, a little background here. Every time your machine starts up, there's a file on it called the registry that Windows runs through, and it checks. That's where everything, like if you double-click a .pdf on your machine, it opens up in Adobe Acrobat. That behavior is written in the registry. Almost all the settings that are in any program are written in the registry. So, only problem is every time you uninstall applications, every time you change certain things, the registry gets a little out of whack. The more issues you have with your registry, the slower the computer is to start, and a lot of the times some of the instances that may show up in might manifest as spyware, or spyware might actually be living in the registry. You know, it might have a little thing in there to allow it to reinstall itself, which is wonderful. The great thing about RegClean is it only deals with the Microsoft section of the registry. It doesn't touch any of the other software areas, and it is very good at what it does. It goes through if you've installed and uninstalled Office a couple times, if you have had like Office 97, Office 2001, Office 2003, now you're up to 2007. There's information about each one of those installations of Office in there. There's just old data that you don't need anymore, which is going to slow your machine down no matter what, especially when you're booting up. So Microsoft wrote this a long time ago. It has a certain list of things that are the way they should be, certain list of things the way they shouldn't be, and runs down, and it does it without any interaction from you. You just unzip it in a directory on your machine. You double-click it, and it says, okay, what do you want me to do? Search for errors. There's three buttons there. The one's grayed out. The first one says search for errors, and the second one says cancel. So you hit search for errors. It searches, and then after just a couple, you know, usually about a minute or so, it comes up and says, okay, fix errors. You click fix errors or hit cancel if you don't want to. And it goes through and cleans out all the stuff that it found was wrong. It doesn't even tell you what it did. And then it does one more thing, which I really like. After it's done and it exits back to that directory, there's an extra file in the directory now that has whatever the date is, and then extra little bit at the end of the file. So if you have any problems, like if you start up your machine and it starts giving you funky errors or something like that, you take that file, you drag it over top of the original RegClean application. So there's going to be one icon that's a little, it looks like a Rubik's Cube with only red and blue blocks on it. That's the application that you double-click to start. And then you take the other one, which is going to look like a Rubik's Cube with only light cyan blocks on it. You drag that over the original RegClean application, and it puts them all back. It does everything, you know, it undoes whatever it accidentally screwed up on your machine. I've only ever had to use it twice, and I can't remember exactly what it was. It was like, I think I upgraded a version of Office on somebody's computer, so it was upgraded from Office 2000 to Office 2003, and they removed Office 2000 completely, and I guess they deleted the directories that it originally came with, and when... There was some funky registry setting in there that we ended up having to reinstall the machine due to other problems, but they weren't able to start Office at all. So after we ran RegClean, so drug it back over it, fixed it, didn't even have to reboot the machine, and that's rare to do with a Microsoft product. Usually you have to reboot for almost anything. So like I said, it's very simple, very clean. Now the next thing is also a registry editing utility, but the good thing is it doesn't touch the Microsoft area of the registry, or called the Hive. It leaves that alone for the most part, except for a couple startup variables. This one's called RegScrub, one word, XP. You just do a Google search for it and you can find it. Again, this one's free, and it's unbelievable. It looks very daunting when you first open it up. It's very simple, very old-fashioned. It's just a gray screen that you have there, and you just have to kind of hunt for the button. I believe it's in the bottom left-hand corner or the top left-hand corner when you open it up, and it says search for errors. Again, it's very simple. Search for errors. Now, this one's going to take a little bit longer because it's dealing with the entire rest of the registry. If you're going to do percentage-wise, and if you had your machine for, let's just say, even if you had it for 6 months and you had a decent amount of software on there, Microsoft probably only takes up around 15% of the registry. So you're searching the other, you know, 75? Yeah, sorry. You're searching the other 85% of the registry, so it's going to take significantly longer. And you'll start to see errors pop up, and it'll say, okay, this value not there, this thing wrong. Now, you don't have to know what any of these mean. That's the other really good thing about this application. You just click another button after it's done, and it says select all entries. Okay, you select them all. Then you say fix errors. Okay, I can do that pretty much too. After you do that, it's going to run through, and it slowly fixes each thing that it perceived to be wrong with the registry. Now, again, if you have an issue, or if it thinks there may be an issue, it'll pop up a little box. It happens sometimes if you have AutoCAD installed on your machine. Like I said, I work in the architecture department, so these are the kind of applications that I experience rather frequently. If you have AutoCAD, like a specifically an older version of AutoCAD on the machine, there are a couple things where it's just a little bit off. It doesn't work correctly. So what it does is, as you're going through RegScrub XP, it actually pops up something that looks like an error. But what they're saying is, what it boils down to is basically, we originally thought this was an error. There is something else that refers to this key, to this value, so it would probably be best if you put this on the ignore list. You just hit OK, and it does it for you. So, or you could just hit Enter. You don't even have to read it. You can just accept what it did. And after it's complete, now this one's going to take, like I said, since you're dealing with the other 85% of the registry, it's going to take a little bit longer to do anything here. So after that one completes and you exit out of the application, that also has one of the good... Sorry, the computer decided to go to sleep there for a second. That also has the lovely feature where if you take the extra file that pops up in the directory and drag it back over top of the application, it will put anything that it messed with back into the registry. And then what you can do is you can select things one by one to actually fix until you see something that goes wrong. It's a little bit more self-explanatory when you see the program. What it basically boils down to is you'll see just a list of long strings and short little variables, and it's largely unintelligible unless you're used to playing around with the registry, and then there's a list of checkboxes. So if you want to fix them one at a time, what you do is you just click one of the checkboxes and they say fix errors. It'll fix that one, then just wait for you. So then you can click the next one. So if there was an application that you found out that wasn't working, it does give you a little bit of information. So for instance, if one of the applications that's not working is an Adobe application, you can select everything and then look through for anything that mentions Adobe and unselect them and then have them fix it. And then you can go through one by one and play with the Adobe ones. All right. Now, moving right along, that wraps up the spyware section. So those are the things that deal with general sluggishness and spyware that can crop up on your machine. Now, the other application that I'm going to talk about here is incredibly advanced. So it's not something that you might want to mess around with. I'm going to give this out there just in case anybody hasn't heard of this. This is one of the applications I'm very pleased with. I've had a lot of success with it. It's called Hijack This. It basically does a top-to-bottom search of your machine. It checks through the registry. It checks through all the files that your machine uses when it starts up. And it goes through absolutely everything. And then it tells you everything that your machine is using when it boots up. It tells you every machine that your computer, or every application that your computer runs. And it goes through and just dumps it all into one giant list. That originally might not seem to be a good idea, might not seem to be a problem, but it allows you to disable them on startup. So, for instance, if you see something that says, it has like a website address /install, that's something you probably don't want to have on your machine. So you can unselect that using Hijack This. The only problem with it is Hijack This has almost no documentation to it. So again, that's why I said this is an advanced feature. There are forums online that allow you to take whatever you had there in that large list and dump it onto a file and post it so that anybody who wanted to or anybody who was out there could actually look through it and help you find out what exactly was going wrong with your machine. There are a couple other applications that are like that, or that are spyware applications that are very hard to remove. One of them specifically is called Cool Web Search. And for the longest time, Hijack This was only one of the only applications you could use to remove Cool Web Search. One of the things that it would do to your machine is if you were starting Internet Explorer, it would pop up in Google or whatever you were had your homepage set as. But anytime you typed an address in, it would redirect you to a different site. And it might not even be the same site every time. Sometimes there was porn on the screen. Sometimes there was just strange wares ads, just illegal software downloads. Sometimes there was all kinds of crazy stuff. And there was massive amounts of viruses in a lot of the websites they played around with. So it was one of those applications that kept reinstalling itself. It found a way to kind of hide in the machine itself and just sort of stayed there. And it was incredibly irritating to remove. You used to have to boot into safe mode and go through like 16 different hoops to do anything. So it Hijack This helped you, so it allowed you to find that one little thing and say, okay, I don't want this to run, I don't want that to run. This is a hidden variable, so you can disable that. But it took a little knowing what you were doing. So again, that's not for the faint of heart nor the beginner there, but just wanted to put that out there. All right, and the other thing that is specifically dealing with Cool Web Search, if you have that popping up and it keeps throwing up an error in SpyBot or AdAware, and it says, "Oh, we found Cool Web Search. Would you like me to remove it?" You click yes, and then you reboot your machine. After it says, "Okay, we might have to run something as we reboot." Okay, no problem. Do it, and you're rebooting the machine. Then it pops up and says, "Guess what? We found Cool Web Search again. Don't know how that happened." So there is something called CWS Shredder. So you search for that. That's again a very beginner level application. Again, it's very free. Free. I mean, there is no very free. It's a free application, so it does the job. It goes through and destroys many different variants of the Cool Web Search, so and it's just something to keep in the back of your toolbox. The other thing that you might not want to, that you might not know about is these adware and spyware applications release new versions almost as quickly as viruses come out. So they're somewhat similar, but they're not the same thing. I mean, spyware versus viruses. So viruses are much more destructive in the machine, whereas spyware has a monetary gain behind it most of the time. With Cool Web Search, they're constantly coming out with different variants. They're constantly coming out with different things that different websites that it comes from, different areas that it's used to install, different places on the machine it even lives. So you always go and download the newest version of CWS Shredder, and it should be able to take care of it for you. All right, that ends the spyware section here. We're going to talk a little bit about one of the other applications, which just basically, we're just going to deal with general sluggishness. Now, we already talked a little bit about the registry and how that can slow down your machine. But the next thing that a lot of the more hardened people know about is, hardened users of Windows know about, but some people are a little afraid to mess around with, is the msconfig feature. Now, the way you get to this feature, again, this is something that can mess up your computer, so just be careful. If you have any issues, there's forums online that people are very helpful in. That's one of the things I actually forgot to mention. The Hijack This forums, the places where people go to post their log files, are incredibly helpful. There's people that get some kind of perverse joy out of just sorting through these massive log files just to find errors in it and help people. So, I mean, if that's what they do to for fun on a Saturday night, more power to them. That they're helping everybody else out, you know? All right, msconfig, back to this. You open up the start menu, you click the run dialog, and you type msconfig. And what this does is this pops up. I'm just going to do this just so I have the correct little thing here, so I'm not telling you wrong information. All right, what it does is it pops up a little application in the center of your screen, and it has a couple different tabs right across the top. The first one's general, then it says system INI, win INI, boot INI, services, and startup. All right, now you don't have to play around with very much here. First thing you want to do is go on over to services, and then you scroll down and find out if there's anything running that you really don't think it needs to be. And if there's something that you're not really sure, like something as strange as cryptographic services, you kind of need that for certain things. I think, Hercules, is that sysinfo.org? Is that where you post the log files? Okay. Sorry about that. You can just run down the... you run down the different list of applications. He's saying sysinfo.org is the stuff that you find at what they do in the startup menu. Basically, anything that says it's from Microsoft Corporation is usually a good bet to keep running, unless it's something like wireless networking and you don't have a wireless card on your machine. It doesn't have to be running. There's other things that I turn off every once in a while. Like if your machine's never going to be hooked up to the network, you can turn off DNS or you can turn off DHCP client. But you always have to remember that these things are kind of there. And service is one of those things you just want to head down. Like every once in a while, for the longest time, I had two different versions of Google Updater in the services. I don't know why, but it was simple enough to head on in there, click remove this, and it just didn't start up next time, which was great. All right, now the next thing you want to do is you check out with Startup. Startup's the tab all the way on the far right-hand side. And you can head down here, and there's a lot of applications that have very cryptic names in here. So there might be something like E_S4Y2J1, which turns out to be a driver for my printer. Now, you might not know that right off the bat, but first of all, it tells you the command. And this is usually the place to work where this is usually the place to look if you don't know what something is and you'd like to find out what that is. So you just run through the command and say, okay, well, under that it says C Windows System 32 spool drivers, and then it gives the name of the printer. So I know that that's what it refers to. So it's just a little bit of deductive reasoning. Then you go down, or for instance, if you have a shortcut to something, or I have my webcam software that starts up, which you are currently watching, that's listed there as Manicam, which is what exactly it is. But it goes through a little bit of a long destination file. So if there's something that's starting up and no matter what you tell the program, it won't stop, this is where you go to take care of it. And the good thing is that after you mess around with it, you have to restart the computer to see the effects, but after you mess around with it, it will pop msconfig up back again when you restart your computer and says, we noticed that you changed the way your machine started up. Did everything work okay? It's one of those good little things where Microsoft's pretty notorious for putting pop-ups that where they don't need to be. Like, would you like to take a tour of Windows XP? No, thanks. The system is 6 years old. I think I know what I'm doing at this point. It just keeps going over and over and over again. So a lot of the times, their pop-ups are not very helpful. This just happens to be one of the places where they are, or where it is, rather. All right. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about today, really, is actually viruses. Viruses, if you don't have antivirus on your machine, you definitely need it. Unfortunately, in the world in which we live, there's very few places you can keep your machine where it's completely secluded from everything. For instance, if you don't use it on the network, but you still bring an outside disk in, guess what? The disk could have a virus. It's one of those things where you don't have to be as scared as they tell you you need to be, but you do need to be very careful about what you do. That involves just knowing where you're surfing. Basically, if it looks like a CD website, if you're getting something for free, then you need to take a look at yourself. You need to take a look at what they might be getting out of the whole deal. You know what I mean? So, for instance, free porn never is. On the same side, when you're downloading free applications called Wares, when you're getting the latest version of Adobe CS3 and you're not paying for it, most of the time there's a little friend riding along shotgun with it. All right, now if you don't have the funding to start up and use Symantec, McAfee, or Microsoft, I think OneCare, I haven't played around with that one yet, so I really don't have any information one way or another about it. But if you don't have the money for that, there is an absolutely fabulous free antivirus tool out there. It's called ClamWin AV. You just do a Google search for it. And the good thing about this is this one actually is listed over at portableapps.com. They have a version that you can drop on a thumb drive. So when you're going to somebody else's machine, you unplug the and you can download the virus updates and everything else, just like any other virus application that you're talking about. But over at portableapps.com, they have all kinds of applications that live on your thumb drive, so you don't need a disk or anything else like that. You plug it in, you start up the application, any temporary files they leave, anything they do is all stays on the thumb drive. So with this, you just take it over to your buddy's computer if he's having issues, or if your computer's having issues. You unplug it from the network. That is is the first thing you do. Then the next thing is you want to make sure that there is nothing else running that needs to be. So you close down iTunes, close down any chat windows that are in the background, or close down any of the little docks that you have at the bottom. And the other thing that you want to do before you mess around with viruses is turn off Google Desktop Search and System Restore. If you happen to have Google Desktop Search running. System Restore, the easiest way to find it is you just right-click on My Computer and you go to Properties, I think. Probably going to the right. And then there's a tab that says System Restore, and you can click it says Turn Off. It erases all the previous restores. Just remember to turn it back on later on. If you mess up something, if you install the wrong driver or something like that, that lets you go back in time a little bit and fix some of your mess-ups. It's one of those things where it's very good to have on, but when you have a virus or something like that, it can actually restore you to a state where the virus was present and still there, so it will put the virus back on your machine. It's a little over helpful at times. So all right, after you have those two things turned off, after you have everything that's running shut down that you need to be, you can pop the thumb drive in, you run ClamWinAV. Now, it's going to be a little bit slower because it's running from a thumb drive, specifically if you don't have a newer computer and you don't have USB 2.0. So basically, if you can't plug an iPod into the into the port on your computer, then it's going to run slow. I think the speed for USB 2.0 is something like 150 megabits a second, which is relatively quick. Not as quick as FireWire, but much quicker than USB 1 or USB 1.1. I don't remember what the speed is on those, but it's so slow that it's painful to work with at times. A lot of the machines that we have in work still have it, and most of the thumb drives that you get now are USB 2.0. So when you plug it in, Windows is smart enough to actually say to you, pops up a little box at the bottom and says, you're using a high-speed thumb drive and a low-speed port. What would you like me to do? And you just basically click off, say, well, there's nothing I can do. All right. And you do same thing as any other antivirus application. You run the scan, and you try and take it and quarantine it or delete the file. The other thing that I'd like you to do at this point, though, is write down the name of the virus that it gives you. And then what you do is you head on over to Symantec.com and you search for that name. Now, if they don't have it, do a Google search for the name of the virus and then space removal tool. A lot of the times, specifically Symantec and McAfee, I think, both have it. I know Symantec has some pretty good ones. They're free. That's the thing that a lot of people don't tell you, is they have free little downloads that allow you to, even if you don't have their product, it's usually a little EXE. One of the things was Blaster Cleanup for the MS Blaster Worm a couple years ago, I think like 4 years ago at this point. But what it did was they updated it every time Blaster was updated, every time the virus came out with a new version. It would just run through your machine, delete all the instances of the virus, and clean up any of the tracks, and close off the hole behind it. So it was pretty good. The other thing that they have, in addition to the virus removal tool, is they actually have instructions on how to do it. And even somebody who works on computers every day, even somebody who spends probably around 12 hours in front of a screen during a day, I still follow through the instructions, because you never know when there might be one of those things where it's just one line that you might have decided to skip, and that's the line that allows the virus to come back onto the machine. So just do yourself a favor. Don't read ahead. Don't try and skip the grade here. Just go through the thing as quickly as you can. All right, now that wraps up what you should do with a virus. I mean, the viruses are one of those things where they can cause so many different problems with your machine. They can go from top to bottom and ruin your life, ruin your ruin everything that you have. That there's just very few basic tips that you need to do with dealing with them. And the first thing is you cut off their lifeline. So like I said, you have to remove the network cable. You have to unplug it from the network. You have to disable the wireless card or turn off your internet connection back at the source, or do whatever you have to do just to make sure that it can't get off your computer. So no one saving homework on floppy disks if you still use those. No one burning CDs, anything, until the virus is gone. Just make sure it's completely quarantined. Quarantine the machine, quarantine the files, and then you should have good success with that. Most of the viruses that are being released now are much more focused on a monetary gain. They're either collecting personal data, or they're screwing around with something in Windows to allow your machine to be used as a bastion to attack other machines. So everything relies on the network. It's no longer just to destroy the machine. Like, for instance, when viruses first came out, well, not really, but way back in the early days of viruses, that were viruses that would actually physically destroy your machine. There was one virus called Thor's Hammer that basically, the simplified explanation was, what it would do is it would tell your machine that the hard drive was actually physically larger than it was. So the two little magnetic heads, zombie machines, that's what they're called, are also called botnets for the machines that actually do the attacks without you ever knowing it. Thank you, Hercules. What Thor's Hammer specifically would do is it would actually take the two little magnetic heads, which float right above the surface of your hard drive. Sorry about that. The cat's playing around. And it would tell them to go just beyond the edge. Well, the two heads were polarized oppositely, so they would crash and your hard drive would be dead. There was another virus. I think this one was actually for the Macs. And yet, believe it or not, Macs used to have viruses. They still do from time to time. So this one was called the Cherry Bomb virus. Mac 2s, I think Mac 2Es maybe, actually had an issue where they didn't know how high of a resolution the monitor could handle. So the virus actually set the resolution of the monitor so high that the tube would burn itself out. I've never actually seen that one. I did see one machine with Thor's Hammer installed. I forget even how you got the virus on the machine, but it was just crazy. The professor or one of the teachers in high school actually showed us it. He had a CD, I don't know why, of I think something like 40,000 different viruses, the source code of them, so you could see how they did what they did. And this might seem a little bit, you know, off the chart for some people, but it's really good if you're in a programming class to find out how the smallest program can cause so much damage. So, you know, you're like, okay, well, what exactly are they doing? How are they operating in, you know, like 16 lines of code to completely ruin my life? So it's a lesson in brevity when you're programming to look at a virus code. And a lot of the time they're actually very elegant, which is scary. All right, the next thing you want to do, the next thing we're going to talk about just for really quickly is things that you need to take into account with your everyday computing. The first thing is whether you have or haven't in the last, let's just say 30 days, run through add or remove programs. See if there's anything in there that you haven't used in a long time that you don't need. The more stuff that's in your computer, the slower it is. If you're getting errors with your hard drive where it pops up and it says, you're running out of disk space, again, that's the first thing you should do. Just remove any old applications. And for instance, if you have older versions of iTunes, what they would do is they would actually install them serially. So you could have 4.95, 5.4, 4. You know, like just going straight in, you have every single one of them still installed. They don't have that problem anymore that I think. I don't think they still do that. But same thing with a lot of the earlier Google applications. They just kept reinstalling themselves. And even some of the early Firefox betas did that. So if you were playing around with Firefox before it came out to version 1.0, you might want to just go in there and make sure there's no other installations laying around. The other thing you want to do is check out a program. Now, this one's not free, but they do have a free trial. Now, every once in a while, you can delete a machine or delete a program off your machine, and it stays in the Add and Remove Programs menu. Now, some people don't. This doesn't bother at all. This irritates the ever-living hell out of me. I can't take it. I don't know why it is, but I like to have everything a little bit neat in that specific area because, if you're trying to work in there and you're trying to clean it out and you're trying to get all the clutter out, it just helps to have programs that are actually installed on your machine sitting in there. So there's a program called Tweak XP. You can buy the full version. It has a whole bunch of different stuff it can do, but the one thing that I found that it's incredibly useful for, that you can use the trial for, is it'll look at the Add and Remove Programs menu and allow you to remove things from Add and Remove Programs. Yes, you can use it to a nefarious means. You can install something on someone's computer and then remove the mention of it from Add and Remove Programs just to allow you to know, but it'll always be in the registry, just to tell you that. So, all right, and then the last couple little things that we wanted to tell you about here is, first thing is, whether you know it or not, every once in a while you should probably reinstall your machine. I know it's horrible to think about, but I usually reinstall my machine about every year and a half to 2 years. Why? Because there's so much stuff that builds up in there. There's so many different things that happen to the machine that you might not even think about, that it just gets slower and slower and slower and to the point where it becomes unusable anymore. So if you're going to have your machine for a long time, the best thing you can do for it is actually give it a clean reinstall every once in a while. So, you know, do the whole thing where you're doing your backups, which we're going to talk about in a second. You back up from A to Z, you burn it all into CDs, you put it on an external hard drive, whatever you want. But you remove all your personal files out there, remove any of the programs that you know you're going to need, make sure you have all the disks, then give it a nice good reinstall, run Windows Update a bunch of times, you know, the whole drill. And then that's it. It can seriously improve the working conditions on your computer. I didn't think it was as important as it was until I was playing around with my machine and work. The machine I had previous to the one that I currently have. I have a brand new machine right now. I think it's like 8 months old at this point. But the other machine that I had was something like 7 years old. So every time I would go and try and do something like simple as start up Word, it would take like 10 minutes for it to actually do it. So I ended up about, I think, like 4 or 5 months before I got the new machine, reinstalling it completely. And it actually almost came back up to usable levels. So take it with a grain of salt, but I know it's a hard thing to actually sit there and think, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with my machine, but I'm just going to teach it a lesson today. I'm going to reinstall it. Sometimes you have to, just to improve your usable experience, you know. And then the second thing I wanted to tell you about right here is that you need to craft your backup solution now. We tell all the students you always need to save your work every 5 to 10 minutes, and it happens every year where somebody's been working on something for 7, 8, 9, 15 hours in a row without saving. I can't personally imagine that. The longest I think I ever went, you know, before I lost data was about an hour and a half. I was doing a lot of photo editing, was working on a document. I'd gone about an hour and a half, was in a real good groove, and boom, the machine, the power went out in the building, and I lost all the work. So I'm very careful about backing up now. So first thing you do, save 10 to 15 minutes, okay? Second thing you do is you need to realize how you're going to back up all of your files. What on your computer right now, if your computer was to suddenly tomorrow not be there, let's just say it's stolen, a complete loss of the machine, if your computer's gone, what would you miss the most? What are the irreplaceable things on your machine? Are they documents you produced? Are they digital photos? Are they movies? Are they you know it? Or is it your music collection on there? What would cause you the most pain? What would cause you the most financial hardship here? Back those up. If you're going to burn them to a CD or a DVD, and they're supposed to be for long-term storage, just a note, there has been actually some tell of DVD rot. You can do a Google search on this to actually find out what it is. I haven't seen it a lot, but it's hard to pinpoint what exactly it is. But basically, the DVD, actually the layers within the DVD and the CD actually start to separate. It happens on some of the cheaper burnable CDs and CDRs and DVDs out there. But the layers actually start to separate. Sometimes it's because of humidity, sometimes it's because of heat. But the disc becomes unusable after a certain point. I haven't reached that point yet, but I pulled a backup out of a older class that they were offering, and the professor wanted to use the same teaching documents again. The class was about 4 or 5 years old. The disc itself was 4 years old. It had been stored in one of our closets. Pulled it out, and the CD had a warp to it. It had a wobble. So I put it in the drive, and luckily it read. But after I was done, and after I copied all the data off and completely backed everything up, you could literally pull the CD apart without doing anything. It was that close to coming apart. So if you're going to back up, CDs and DVDs are probably not the most long-term solution, just to let you know. Specifically for photos, just putting that out there. I mean, photos are one of those things that you can't replace. So, all right, the easiest thing to do here is actually an external hard drive. Sometimes I get ahead of myself when I talk, but the easiest thing to do here is get an external hard drive. They're coming down in price, and the good thing about it is you need to just take a stock of what exactly, what applications or rather what documents you wouldn't be able to live without, and then buy an external hard drive that's twice that size. So if you have a 30 gig music library and you have 10 gigs of documents that you wouldn't be able to replace, that's, you know, all right, you have 40 gigs right there. You have an 80-gig hard drive that you need just to allow for expansion. I usually tell people if you can afford it, you should buy 2 external hard drives. The first external hard drive you should keep in your desk drawer, and every month you should back it up. The second one you should either keep at a relative's house or in a safe deposit box if you have one. I know this seems very very paranoid. But I actually thought about this when Todd Cochran, the guy from Geek News Central podcast, was actually talking about it. He said earlier in his life he actually had a house fire and they lost everything. So he's incredibly paranoid about that. So he actually has, you know, the same thing I was telling about. He has the external hard drive and then he has one in a safe deposit box, because if your house goes up in flames, you're never going to be able to get that information back without paying thousands of dollars to have the machine restored. You can actually get data off some of the destroyed hard drives, but it costs a lot of money. So, and then the second thing that, or rather the third thing here, to kind of make your experience better to prevent hard drive issues is if your machine only has one hard drive, you probably want to put a second one in, or you want to cut your hard drive in half. It's usually better to put a second hard drive actually in your machine and just put all of your documents over there. Don't save any physical documents on the root drive, on the place where the applications are. By separating these two types of files that are on your machine, you actually increase the life expectancy of the hard drive. Because if you're editing a document, let's just say you're editing a photo, the photo is living on the same drive as the application. That drive is constantly spinning and it's going to, you know, back and forth to two completely different separate sections on the hard drive. This is what hard drives are made to do, but over time the wear and tear really, you know, drags down. So it seriously helps out with that. And then I think that's about it. I have a whole list of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about here. I think we got all the way through it today, so hopefully that'll help you out in your system cleanup and maintenance. This has been the Caffeination Podcast Tech Talk Live. We were doing this every Wednesday evening at 10:30 Eastern Daylight Time. That's five hours before the Greenwich Mean, GMT minus 5. So hopefully everybody out there can join us for the next time. We are on Skype while this happens, so in case you'd like to Skype in with a comment, you can Skype The Caffeination, one word, TheCaffeination, or you can actually dial our listener line and leave a comment before the show, something you'd like to hear maybe. We have voicemails that have showed up on previous shows, 215-240-1319, or if you're in the continental United States, you can actually click the Call Me button over at caffeination.com, and the good folks at Grand Central will actually call your phone and leave your phone anonymous, so I won't be able to find your phone number if you click that little button, and it'll allow you to not have to pay any kind of long distance charges. We're trying to set up a couple other things to allow people to leave voicemails and leave comments, audio comments specifically from other places. So hopefully that system will get up and running. I had something and then it stopped working. So I had actually a program I installed on caffeination.com and then for some reason the file bombed out and it just wouldn't work. So all right, again, this has been the Caffeination Tech Talk Live. Thank you very much for joining us for the System Cleanup and Maintenance Edition. If you tune in again tomorrow on 9/6/2007, or actually head on over to Caffeination rather, the full edition of Caffeination 161 will be up. So thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for sticking around and stay caffeinated.